Yontif. Happy Erev Black Friday. So over the years, I've given this year a bunch of times. So I asked Rabbi Bacon, should I speak about the usual? Should I speak about Thanksgiving, about the kashrus of turkey? He said, Parsha. Okay, Parsha. We'll talk about the Parsha. The Parsha opens up with, we see that Yitzhak and Rivka are having difficulty having children. So they David and Baruch Hashem, they're blessed with twins. Rabbi Shachter likes to say over from the Ma'aril Diskin, but I've seen it other places as well. The whole story is a little problemsome. We understand from the famous Rashi that Rivka was walking past the Beis Medrash and the baby's kicking to get out, and then she's walking past the Beis Avodah Zarah and the baby's kicking to get out, and she doesn't know what's going on. And came. Why do I need this for, really? So she finally looks into it, and she goes to Shem Ve'ever, and they take a sonogram, and they say, Shnei Goyim Bevitnech, Mazel Tov, it's going to be twins. And, you know, one's going to be a really, really, really good guy, and the other guy's going to be a really, really not good guy. She said, okay, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem, you just told you one of your children's going to be one of the worst Rishayim that are ever born. Where did the Baruch Hashem come from? So the Ma'aril Diskin says, and it says it in other places as well, it says, you see from an important yisod, if you can have a tzaddik as a child, that's wonderful. If you can have a rasha, what are you going to do? But to have a child that half the time does Torah and half the time does Mada, that would not be acceptable. That she could not possibly live with. Therefore, when she heard that, when her children was Baruch Hashem, just a rasha, okay, then that was okay. She could move on. There's another famous Dvar Torah. They all say, supposedly, I saw it was quoted as a Chasam Sofer. This is the first time this year. I was doing the Parsha. I saw it. But I couldn't find it in the Chasam Sofer. The question is, we have a tradition that the child learns with the Malach as long as the mother is pregnant. So why was Yaakov so excited to get out of the womb? We're learning with a Malach. What could possibly be better than that? So the answer that they traditionally said, he didn't like his Chavrusa. Wanted to move on, wasn't happy, learning in the same yeshiva as Esav. It's time to move on. So I thought it was always a joke. Now they said it was a Chasam Sofer, but I couldn't find it there. It also still be a joke. But that's what it is. Eventually, the children are born. And the whole story between Yitzhak and Rivka are very interesting. Revitzin Rosenzweig likes to point out that if you look at the entire Chumash, Rivka and Yitzhak hardly ever talk. There's only one thing that Rivka ever says to Yitzhak in all the years in the entire Chumash, and that is? What? I don't like the Benos Chais. That's the only thing she ever said to him. And he doesn't even respond. He says, fine, okay. Good. It's very interesting that as far as I know, on the record, this is perhaps the longest marriage in the Torah. Because at the time that they get married, Rivka, according to Rashi, is 3 years old, and Yitzhak is 40 years old, and Yitzhak lives to be 180, and Rivka lives to be over 100 also. So they are the only case that I know of where it's pretty clear. Again, we don't have exactly the date that she dies, but we have the idea that Rashi does make a comment that Yaakov gets a message that his mother died. Alon Bachus. So it's the only couple we have in the entire Torah that reaches their 100th anniversary. Now, Adam and Chava, I would have to guess they probably did as well. But we don't know how old Chava was when she died. So therefore, I can't... Avram has a child at the age of 130. And we have every reason to believe that he didn't have a second wife. So one could assume that way. But in terms of... we would say the post-Parshas Noach, this is as long as a marriage goes, and they hardly ever talk to each other. So I don't know. For some reason, they don't have me give the pre-marriage shiurim, but it sounds like there's some significant advice a person could find by putting those two pieces together. Putting that out there, just to say. So they go on, and they get married, and Baruch Hashem, they're blessed with two children, and right away, Yaakov's taking advantage of Esav. It's so sad. What happens is, so all of a sudden we have here that Asa finds himself in a near-death experience, that he's starving, and he comes home to the Jew who's cooking, and he says, you know, I'm dying of starvation. He says, well, what are you going to pay me? Right, give me your Bechora. So it seems that there was a total ripoff here. The Bechora was something so unbelievable, and he got it literally for the Indians didn't get as ripped off. Little Indian idioma when they sold Manhattan as Asaph did when he got here. Little unrelated fact. Do you know where that happened? Where the actual deal went down? Anybody? In your bagel? What? On 210th Street, there is a rock that marks the spot where this deal actually went down. If anybody wants to go, go down Isham Street. It's at the end there. There's a park. So how could he do this? It's very interesting. Whenever we talk about the Midos of the Avos, it's Titein Emes LeYaakov. Right? Avram Chesed LeAvraham, Yitzchak was Gevura, Yaakov is Emes. That's what we know. So how is Ish Emes doing something like this? Is this really fair? Right? Isn't it Onah? Something like that? There's got to be some halacha that he violated here. How is this allowed? So Rabbi Aaron Levine, of blessed memory, we used to speak about this. Rabbi Aaron Levine was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham. He was also the head of the economics department here. So he spoke about what is the price of something. So this was the first case he pointed of a bilateral monopoly. The value of something is what the other person will pay for it. And it's very difficult. So again, in America in particular, we have something called the Sherman Antitrust Act. We stop monopolies because monopolies are a bad idea. If I'm the only person who's selling fill in the blank, I will charge whatever I want and I'll give you the lowest quality I want to give you. Competition, we believe we are a capitalist society. Judaism is a capitalist religion. And we believe that, in fact, capitalism is a good thing and monopolies are a bad thing. We are opposed to Gemara all the time, talks about what we do to stop these things. So therefore, we want competition. We don't like monopolies. Because if there's a monopoly, one person will take advantage of the other person. What if there's a bilateral monopoly? A bilateral monopoly means that there's only one seller of this product. But guess what? There's only one buyer also. Right? In fact, we have monopolies that go the other way. Unions oftentimes can be a monopoly. We are the union. We have all the workers. So therefore, you're going to pay for the workers, whatever we say. That's bad also. It's bad if there's only one factory that's doing all the hiring, because they'll pay whatever. And it's also bad. But if there's one factory and one union, then we're fair again. It's what's called a bilateral monopoly. So in fact, when this was the case, this is the first case in the history that we have a bilateral monopoly. There's only one person that could sell the Bechorah, and that was Esav. On the other hand, who else was he going to sell to? The only person that Esav could sell to was Yaakov. So therefore, you had this case was a bilateral. So what is the value of a bilateral monopoly? When we talk about the fair price of something, that involves supply and demand. But this is the odd case where supply is one and demand is one. So therefore, at that point, the value of something becomes the intrinsic value of the product itself. So what is the intrinsic value of the Bechora? Well, it depends. If you're Yaakov, it's very great. If you're Esav, it's very low. The Bechora wasn't worth much to Esav. When he asked Yaakov, tell me about this Bechora thing. What did Yaakov? He told him the truth. Well, for you, Esav, what's going to be? It's going to be is you're going to end up being Chayim Misa. Because you're not going to do the Avodah the way it's supposed to be. You can't be the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. If we send you into the Kodesh Kadoshim on Yom Kippur, it's a good thing we're going to have a rope around you because we're pulling you out. So in fact, if there was any value of the Bechorah to Esav, it was negative. Now on the other hand, the value was very great as far as Yaakov's concerned. Right? So therefore, it says in that case, there is no set value. And in the case of a bilateral monopoly, the value is whatever the negotiated value is. Because whatever Esav is going to get from it, it's more than it's worth for him. And whatever Yaakov is going to pay, it's going to be worth more than that to him. So therefore, pretty much any price would have been fair for the Bechorah. And therefore, it's just a matter of negotiations. And therefore, there's absolutely nothing wrong, even from a halacha. You don't got to give me any tiras behind it. Vayivez, that he kicked it afterwards. But no, it's nothing like that. It's just a matter that in terms of true value, there is no market value because there is no market. And in terms of intrinsic value to Esav was very close to nothing. So that is the reason why, Titein Emes LeYaakov, Akiv Yaakov, there was absolutely nothing wrong whatsoever in what he did in negotiating in that case. So once he had the realization, Hinei Anochi Horech Lamos, okay, so forget it. That's what it's worth to you. The beginning of the Parsha is very well known. The end of the Parsha is very well known. The middle of the Parsha is kind of boring. We dig. If you're into ditch digging, it's a very exciting Parsha. But for those of us who don't, are not the ditch digging minors, or ditch digging majors, not that's not a good market. It's an opportunity to prepare for the future today. We have ditch digging for tomorrow, today. This is the place to be. So the question is, why do we keep on talking about this ditch digging? The whole story is very strange. So the first thing that we have to wonder about is Yaakov. So Yitzhak is basically living the life of his father. He's the first rung in the Masorah. This is the beginning of the Masorah. He has to attach himself to Avram. He looks exactly like Avram. He's acting exactly like Avram. That's what he's trying to do. And therefore, when Vayira Ba'aretz, when there is a famine, he's going to do like his father's. He wants to go into Chutz La'aretz. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you're different. You can't go to Chutz La'aretz. So he does the next best thing. He goes to Gaza. Send him down to Gaza. Gaza, it seems from here, is at least at that time part of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, he's going to go down to Gaza, to the Pushtim, the same way that his father did. That's close enough. So right away, he's not getting along with the people there. But the first thing that he goes is he's obviously a religious man, because he sets up Mea Shearim. What's Mea Shearim? What is Mea Shearim? So Mea Shearim doesn't mean 100 gates. It means 100 times as much. It says here that he would go and he'd figure it out, given the land and given the type of year they were having, the weather, etc. What is he supposed to grow? And he ended up shotsing up how much he grew, and he grew 100 times as much as he expected. Why was he counting? Well, there were income taxes in Gaza. Why was he so interested in knowing exactly? That general, better not to look. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a better bracha when you don't know what's going on. So why was he counting so much? So Rashi answers the question. He said he did it for Maaseris. It's very interesting. Look at the Rambam. The very beginning of the Mishnah Torah, he explains how the halacha developed. And he explains that Adam HaRishon got 6 mitzvahs. And then Noach got a 7th mitzvah. But after Noach got the 7th mitzvah, so Avram got a mitzvah. What mitzvah did Avram get? Got the mitzvah of Milah. Then Yitzchak got a mitzvah. What mitzvah did Yitzchak get? Maaseris. This is the mitzvah of Yitzchak Avinu. He has the mitzvah of Maaseris. So the question is, for starters, is Maaseris, who is he giving it to? So we know from beforehand, right? Even though that he was supposed to be v'chayiv in the mitzvah of Maaseris, we know that Avram gave Maaseris as well from Vayitan lo Maaseris mekol. In fact, Maaseris is the only, right, when in the war of the 4 kings versus the 5 kings, right, afterwards he gets a visitor, and we heard that who kohen lekel elyon, that there's a kohen who came, so he gave him Vayitan lo Maaseris mekol. In fact, the only mitzvah that is mentioned by all three of us is the mitzvah of Maaseris. You have Vayitan lo Maaseris mekol, you have here the Mea Shearim, and then by beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov Avinu says, Kol asher titein li, aser asrenu lach. Vayetze. Zul zayin azoy. Again, Vayishlach, Esav is coming with 400 men, not from Yaakov Davin to Hashem. So at the beginning of Vayetze, you have that as well. But also, Tosfos in Chulin, and that's where the pasuk's from. So very interesting. You get the impression that the mitzvah of Maaseris must be a very important mitzvah. If the Chumash bothers to tell us that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they all gave Maaseris, you assume it's a very important mitzvah. And that the mitzvah of Maaseris, in particular the mitzvah of Maaseris Ksofim, which is likely what we're talking about here, Kol Asher Titein Li, doesn't just seem to be agriculture, and in fact, as far as we know, the only Maaseris that Yaakov would give was Maaseris Behema. He was in the shepherding business. He wasn't in the growing business. So it would seem that the mitzvah of Maaser Kesavim is something that really is particularly important. The truth of the matter is that there's a four-way machokes. What is the chiyuv of mitzvah Maaser? Some people talk a hold it's the Maaser. Aser Tasrenu Lach, the Sifrei, seems to indicate that that's a drasha from Maaser Kesavim. Aser Taser, there's two types of Maasers. There is the agricultural Maaser, and then there's also Maaser Kesavim. But most people assume that's not really a real drasha. It's maybe an asmachta, so maybe it's the Rabbanan. Other people hold it's not even the Rabbanan, it's a minhag. And some people hold it's not even a minhag, it's a neder. What's the difference between a minhag and a neder? A minhag, if your father did this, so you have to do it. If it's a neder, just because he did it, means you don't have to do it either. Well, Halacha Rav Avadya points out many times that we assume that Maaser Kesavim is a neder, the lowest of the four levels. And in fact, Rav Avadya says, oftentimes, if you have a shaila about what to do about Maaser, you know, his answer always is, so be mater neder. So now you don't have to give Maaser at all. And then accept it however you want. You want to give on this? Except I do give Maaser. You know, I don't give Maaser on this. Whatever it is, he said, the whole thing's a neder. So it's very strange that the Chumash keeps on harping on this idea that it's so important that Avram does it, Yitzhak does it, Yaakov does it, if at the end of the day, the whole thing's a very, very low level of chiyuv. So why is there such a focus on it? So the answer seems to be, is as follows. It's very interesting that when it comes to business, there's a general relationship between risk and reward. Right? The greater the risk, the greater the reward. If I get the safest investment out there is government bonds. Why is it so safe? Because if the government runs out of money, what do? They print more money, right? As long as there's paper and as long as there's ink, the government will always have money, right? That's all what they need. They have paper, they have ink, they have printing presses. They'll always be able to pay you back, right? Very little risk involved in it, and therefore also very little return. If you buy it at this point, you give the government the guarantee you can have my money for the next 10 years, they're only going to give me 2% on it. Then there's something with a little bit of more risk. Let's say I lend my money to a state. So a state can print money. Right? All the state they can do is they can tax, which is really the next best thing. Right? So therefore, since the state can tax, right, it's not as good as printing money, so I'm going to get a little bit more return. I'm taking on a little more risk. Then what they're going to have to pay me is a little bit more. And then if I go to a city, well, cities also they can tax. But there are cities like Detroit. So that's not always going to work. Right? So therefore, there's a little bit of more risk. And then there are places that can tax, but they are Apple, they're Google, they're Microsoft. They're the next best thing to printing money, right? So therefore, they're going to give me, and then as you go on until you eventually get to pets.com, they're going to have to pay me a lot more money, Yeshiva University, they have bonds as well. And in fact, the Moody's are suggesting that they're going to have to pay me more money still. The greater the risk I'm going to take on, the higher my interest rate. What would be the safest investment you could imagine? And there was an investment that was underwritten by God. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only could he print the money, he could make the paper and he could make the ink also. Right? There's zero risk whatsoever. So what would you expect the return to be? Right? You're expecting de minimis return. If you keep up with inflation, you'd be doing well with that. That's what you would expect. Truth of the matter is, it says, Aser Taser, Aser Shetis Asher. The Gemara tells us in Tainus that Kadosh Baruch Hu guarantees a person if they give Maaser Kesavim, they will be paid back. They will get an unbelievably, they'll get 1,000% return on something with no risk whatsoever. In fact, the Pasuk tells us, this week's Haftarah? Is it? Bachuni Nam Bezos in Malachi. It's the other one. This is also from Malachi this week, though, right? It's the other one. So it says, right? Havias kol ba'asor seichem la'otzer. So it says in Malachi, I dare you. Generally, it says lo sinasun es Hashem elokeichem. And generally, you're not supposed to challenge God. God says, I'll make an exception. I dare you. Bring all your tzedakah, right? Bring all the ma'aser you're supposed to do, and see if I don't make you wealthy. So a person in this case actually has the right to say, okay, here's tzedakah, I'm going to ask that I get it back in spades. That's what I want. And there's nothing wrong with that. So why don't people do it? It's interesting. People come to me all the time. They have shilas. Generally, they're looking for kulas. That's why they came to me. And Rabbi Simon was busy. So it's rare that someone says to me, is there a way I can get more than the maximum into a tzedakah? I know there's a maximum of 20%, you know, takanas usha. Rabbi, do you have any kulas for me that I can maybe give 25%? Maybe I can give 30%. Oh, is there something you got up your sleeve? Maybe some sort of like we could sell it to a guy or something. Right? You know? Maybe there's got to be, maybe Pete can do it. What is it that we can try to pull off here? Why don't you see that? If you have such a great investment, with such great returns and such low risk, why aren't people banging down their doors to give money to great tzedakahs like Yeshiva University? Right? Right? How come on giving day we end up making 50 cents beyond whatever was pledged beforehand? What's the reason for this? So the answer tends to be because people don't really believe. If people really believe that this was such a good investment, taka, they would be throwing their money at it. So it ends up that the chiv of meiser, that happens to be taka, not a high, it's not a daraisa probably, it's not a darabanan, it's not a minig, it's probably just a nether. But what it actually is, anochi Hashem alokecha, it's actually the mitzvah of amuna. It's actually one of the few places where Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I hear you say you believe, but put your money where your mouth is. Right? If you really believed, then you're going to do this. Avram did it. Yitzhak did it. Yaakov did it. How come you're not doing it? Right? So that's why it becomes such an important mitzvah. Not because it's such a chiyuv. It's dafka because it's not a chiyuv. If it was a mitzvah d'oraisa, you wouldn't have a choice. Okay, Rav says, no. Not mechuyev you. Right? The mitzvah tzedakah, shlish shekel. That's all you got to give. Don't worry about it. You all gave enough. Right? The Raisa, the Rabbanan. This is a matter of, do you really believe what's going to happen if you give more? V'chuni nobezos. Right? I'm being bochen your Kadosh Baruch Hu says. To see if you really, really believe. So that's why they play such a major role. Very strange story. So all of us, so originally, we're doing just like our father Avram did. And our father Avram said, all right, you know, we're going to announce that my wife is my sister. So Yitzchak also announces. And unlike Avram and Sarah, they don't talk so much. So he did ask her before. He just makes the announcement. And then time passes and things seems to be going well. And then Yitzchak finds himself in a very uncomfortable position. As Avimelech notices that Rivka is married to Yitzchak. How does he notice this? Seems to say in the Chumash that he saw the two of them living together. It's embarrassing. What's going on here? So besides everything else, the Gevurah in Tainis makes a comment that is quoted in Rashi later on in Chumash, that during a time of a famine, a man's not allowed to live with his wife. So there's a famine going on here. How are they living together? Besides we have the sneeze issues we have here. This should be a problem, right? The reason he's in there is because he's in Gerar because there's a famine. So if there's a famine, how can he live with his life? Isn't it against the Gemara? So it's very interesting. So if you look at the, I think the Marsha says there, he wasn't Mekayim Pruravu yet. He only had two sons. Since he only had two sons, he wasn't Mekayim Pruravu. If you're not Mekayim Pruravu, then in fact, you're okay. And in fact, it's the same answer by Levi. Right? We have a tradition, Rashi quotes again later in Chumash, that Yochevel was born Bein HaChomos. She was born as they were entering Mitzrayim, which means she was probably conceived around 9 months earlier. She was conceived 9 months earlier, that was the middle of the famine. Again, that's why we know Levi only had sons, he didn't have any daughters. Because it wasn't Mekayim the Mitzvah. But wait a second, a little bit of a problem here. Because how do we know that there's a halacha you're not allowed to live with your wife during a famine? What's the makor for it? Anybody? What's Gemara Tainis quote? Yosef. Says Yosef had two sons, Terem, right before the famine began. Did Yosef have any daughters? Yosef didn't have any daughters. So, the whole way we learned it is, so how can you tell me that Pru Revu is a heter to get you around this, and that's in fact what Yitzchak was relying on, and that's what Levi was relying on, if the whole Makor is from Yosef, who was in the same boat as they were. So, if you want to get smart about it, it's probably, it might be totally in the Machokas Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. Machokas Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, what does it take to be Kayim Pru Revu? So Beis Hillel says, as we all know, boy and a girl. Beis Shammai says, two boys. So obviously it seems from there that Yosef is following the Shita of Beis Hillel, while Yitzchak and Levi were following the Shita of Beis Shammai. So according to that, now again, this would seem to be a little bit against the famous noted... What? That they, right, correct. That they were following, that Yitzchak, that Yosef was following Beis Shammai, while Yitzchak and Levi were following Beis Hillel. So it's a very interesting idea that the whole marker, the whole halacha then, in the Tainus is based on Shitas Beis Shammai that we don't follow. So it's a little bit of something worth looking into. It's an interesting question. All right, we're digging ditches. Didn't we say that? So what happens? He digs one time and it doesn't work. He digs a second time, it doesn't work. Finally, he digs a third time, everything's all better. Very nice. Hip, hip, hooray. Why is anything different? So there are different mefarshim have different ideas as to what happens. So if you look closely at the psukim, it says, Vayachpru, am I in the right place? Here it is. Vayachpru avdei Yitzchak benachav yimtu sham ber mayim chayim. So Yitzchak's servants went and they dug a well. Vayiriva roe grorim roe Yitzchak lemor lanu hamayim. Vayirkashim aber esak ki his asku imo. So they fought of it and they called it esak, that they were fighting because that's what they were doing. So let's try again. Vayachpru ber acheres. Vayiriva gamorel. Vayikrashmo sitna. So again, the servants dig again, and they find they call it sitna. What's sitna? Hate. They take me shom vayipar be'er acheres. Rav olel vayikrosh mar rechavos vayomai ki atohir chiv Hashem lanu afreinu baris. So then he moves on, digs another one, calls it rechavot. Why? Everything's good. She's being prosperous now. Why did he miss on the first two and he hit on the third one? So different mafarshim, different ideas. Rabbi Baumel, I think was the grandfather of Rabbi Lam, has a parish where he points out that if you look at the first one, it says, Vayach Peru Avdei Paro, Avdei Yitzchak, that his servants went and they dig. Then the next one says again, Vayach Peru, plural, meaning that who is digging? Again, the same people. The third one says, Vayach Por, singular. What's the indication? The indication that Yitzchak himself finally did the work. So he says that the bottom line is that as long as you're going to send it out, you're not going to do the mitzvah yourself. You want to be like your father, so be like your father and dig yourself. You're going to send them out, you're not going to be matzliach. That's one approach. Rav Sternbach has a different approach. Sternbach says the difference is the first thing is he digs, right? And they end up fighting about it. Again, he digs again, they end up fighting. But then what happens? But yeah, take Misham, he moves on. Digs again, now you're matzliach. He doesn't abhor in yisod, he said that in life, it's not about being right. It doesn't matter about justice, etc. If there's a machlokas, you leave. Even if you're right, you don't sit there and say, for the sake of justice, I have to fight. No, for the sake of other people's justice, you have to fight. For the sake of your justice, you could be mevater. So it was Yitzchak. Yeah, Yitzchak actually dug it. Yeah, Yitzchak actually owned it. But as long as he sit there, he kept on fighting. There was still his askus. He was still fighting over it. As long as there was meriva. Right? There was sitna, there was hate. You're not going to see any bracha come out of that. However, finally, when he picks up, he says, fine, do whatever you want here, I'm moving on. Then rechovos, then he had great hatzlacha. That's a basic yesod in life. Don't worry about justice so much. Someone else has a problem, you fight for them. You yourself have a problem, you can be mochel. You'll do much better in the end.
More marriage
advice? I don't know. It wasn't being recorded. I was talking about some smarty with marriage advice. After we turn it off. Can you pause this thing? So, Moving on. Very interesting. So Esav gets married. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Kiddush, kiddush. No tachman. So he marries a woman named Yehudit. Nice Jewish name. So Rashi says it's baloney. Wasn't really her name. Why not? He says, because who was this Yehudis really? That's some other Goyish woman. Wanted his father to think she was Jewish. Named her Yehudis. So what's the word Yehudi? Yehudi is Jew. Where does the word Jew come from? Yehudah, right? Judeans, right? So therefore, Asa married a woman and named it after Yehuda, so Yaakov would think she's Jew. So Yisrael would think, what? Yehuda wasn't born yet. What does that have to do with anything? Ridiculous. Right? Wait, what do you mean that she thought she named him Yehudis to think he was Jewish? Well, Yehudis comes from the word Yehuda. So then the whole thing doesn't make any sense. Right, so you see from here that the word to be a Jew cannot come from the Yehudi, from Yehuda, because if that's the case, how would Esav be already naming someone after that? The whole thing, in fact, they point out that oftentimes, altar, point to this, altar is not Jewish. Why not? Because we're all from Shevet Yehuda. You're not from Shevet Yehuda, correct? Clearly you're not a Jew. Fine, move on. Chayiv Misa for learning Torah. So the truth of the matter is that that's most likely, and we see from here that that's not where the word Jew comes from, because the word Jew came from Judah, right? And you from Yehudi, coming from Yehuda, then of course this whole Rashi would make no sense whatsoever. Why would he be naming her Yehudis to trick before he was even born? Rather, the Raya, the truth really would seem to come from the Gemara and Megillah. Ish Yehudi haya b'shushan habira, u'shmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish ish Yemini. What Shevet was he from? Binyamin ish Yemini. So why is he called Ish Yehudi? What? Because he was Yehudi. Because he was a Yehud. Yehudi comes from the word Yehud. He was a monotheist. Right? He only believed in one God. Ish Yehudi, there was a monotheist out there. He happened to be from Shevet. So too, Yehudis comes from the word Yehudit, that she's not a pagan. She is someone who worships the one God. That's what he was trying to fake his father out with. Right? So because of that, that's how it makes it. That's why we're called Jews, because we believe in one God. That is where the word comes from. It doesn't come from Yehuda in all likelihood, because if so, this whole thing wouldn't make any sense. Esav was an interesting fella, wasn't he? Yes.
Still doesn't make sense. Like, he thinks he's going to trick
Yitzchak. Yeah. All the time. It's very interesting. So elsewhere it says they tried to trick Yitzchak. He asked him about a tough shiloh, so firm he was. He says, tell me, you have to take miser on salt? What kind of question? It's like, do I have to take miser on my socks? It's not gedulei karka. What kind of question is it? You have to take miser on salt, right? Why in the world do you have to take miser on salt? So I heard from Rabbi Schechter, he probably says this from time to time, where he says that that there is a medrash that says that Eshes Lot turned into a pillar of salt, and the punishment wasn't just that she turned into a pillar of salt, but it says that the animals would come and lick her every day, all the way down to her feet, and then she'd grow back the next day and she'd have to go through it again. Every single day. He said, so that was the Shiloh of Esav. The salt of Esav's lot that grows every day, is that Chayev and Meiser? Is that considered Gedulei Karka? That's Taka Talmud Chacham Shiloh. He wasn't asking to have Morton's table salt. He was asking the salt of Esav's lot. That's Taka. He's not Jewish. Right? So, yeah, just, Twersky's Jewish. Very Jewish. So, yeah.
Wasn't salt
also? Yeah, also Tevin. The other one made sense. This is the Shara. So, yeah, but this was the other case. Obvious what the question was. He wants to know about Mysers. But by salt? So that's the question. All right. So, we get to the end. It's time to trick out the ace. Yitzchak decides, okay, it's time to see what's going on here. He says, who knows? He says, I don't know. He says, Esav, I don't know how much time I've got left. It's time to move on. So, Rashi points out, why now? Why Pinchas does he think that did he just come back from the doctor? Did he get some bad news? Why does Yitzchak think that his time might be up? So Rashi says he's 123 years old, right? Because we know that they were Yaakov and Esau were 63 at this point. If you do the math, it works out. Yitzchak was 60 when they were born, so therefore he's 123. And he says that, you know, he knows you're supposed to be choshesh for misa when you get to within 5 years of the age of your parent. And even though his father lived to be 175, his mother died at 127, so he's already 123. He's in the red zone. So therefore, that's why he's concerned. It's very interesting that this is a yesod. It seems that when you get within 5 years of the potential end, there's a much greater chance that it's going to happen. So that could be bad news like this, but it could also be good news. So we have a tradition that the world's going to last up to 6,000 years. At some point it's going to end. Right? Mashiach's going to come. The regular world's going to stop being the way it is. 6,000, right, happens to be very related, it seems, to the tradition that some people have that the lifespan, the maximum lifespan of a human being is 120 years. Because one human year is pretty much 50 years, a Yovel cycle in the history of Earth. So therefore, 6,000 is 120 Yovel cycles. With every Yovel cycle being 1 year of Earth. It works out. You'll get your fingers together, you'll see. So the idea being that we have dog years, right? We have people years, right? There's Earth years. A Yovel is one Earth year. So the idea is that once you get within 5 years of the end of what could potentially be the end, right, the expected end, then it's much more shayach. So starting the year 5750 in 1990, the odds of Mashiach became much greater. Right, so we're already at a half a yovel cycle since then, right? So therefore, our mitzapel Yeshua. We have reasons to hope a little more now because based on this yesod that Yitzchak Avinu tells us in Rashi here, within 5 years, it's much more shayach, you have to worry about it. So to here, right, we are in the equivalent of the age of 123 for him. That's where the earth is right now in terms of you working towards your Mos HaMashiach. Lots to be said about this. There wasn't an end time on the thing, but some are getting close to it. That's what I would think. You might have been thinking that a half hour ago. But I don't care. We'll give one more quick vort. This is from the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi says that we know what happens. Yaakov gets dressed the way he gets dressed, and then he starts talking. He starts talking like Yaakov, he blows it. You know, he starts talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So all of a sudden, Yitzchak says, we got a problem here. On the one hand, Hakol Kol Yaakov. This guy doesn't sound like Esav. Yadayim Yidei Esav. So what are we going to do? So he says, okay, let's give the brachas. Wait a second, that's not the way to go. Shouldn't he have said, Hakol Kol Yaakov, Yadayim Yidei Esav? We should look into this a little more. Why did he just give the brachas? So Beis HaLevi is a very interesting idea. Very original, as Rabbi Shachter would say. Well, what's his idea? His idea is as follows. He said, Esav didn't trust Yaakov. Didn't trust him for a second. So he said to his father, he said, listen, I'm concerned that Yaakov's going to try to get me out of this. And he had reason to be concerned. Yaakov did actually own the Bechorah at this point. He said, so therefore, what we're going to do is as follows. When I come here, I'm going to talk like Yaakov. Because I know he's going to try to talk like me. Right? And therefore, you'll know that'll be our simon. So therefore, when Yaakov doesn't change his voice, he says, "Kol kol Yaakov, hayadayim yidei Esav, two for two. All right, let's go. Time to go home. Everything worked out fine." And with that, he goes on and he gives him the brachas. What?
Esav doesn't talk like Yaakov when he comes in.
What? Yeah, well, if a few shilohs on this, you can ask.
Why doesn't Yaakov talk like Esav?
Huh? You're saying it's a double, triple. Everyone that manages to outthink themselves. Could be that Esav just didn't know how to do it. He just was not naturally talented at it. The whole thing's very strange at the end. There's a question I have that I never found an answer to, and that is as follows. Why didn't Yaakov just go up and say, oh, by the way, I'm the Bechor because I bought it? Right? We assume at the beginning of the Pasha, the beginning of the Pasha was worth something, right? This deal, if the deal was worthless, so why would Yaakov have, why does the Chumash bother telling us about it? The fact that the Chumash bothers to tell us that there was this deal where he bought it makes it sound like it worked. So if it worked, he had a right to the brachas. Why did he just go to his father and say, done, I bought it? And not only that, and Rashi says it makes it sound like the exact opposite. He said, Ani Esa b'chorecha. Rashi says, oh, it's a Torah. Ani ich bin ich. Esa b'chorecha. But Esav wasn't the b'chor. Yaakov was the b'chor. Yaakov paid for the b'chor. So Yaakov, in fact, really was the b'chor. So why didn't they just do that? Why didn't he just fess up and say, listen, Dad, here's the deal. Here's what went down. Join. Very interesting. Well, one more part. This is from the Grizz. It's one of my favorites. When Rivka calls in Yaakov, Yaakov is not happy at all. He said, what's going to happen? My father's going to catch me. I'm not going to get a bracha. I'm going to call her. So Rivka said, Alai kill Alascha b'ni. Whatever, Chris. You are rubber. I am glue. I got it. Don't worry about it. So Velvel says that Alai kilos chudil. What doesn't mean that? He says Alai is Rashi Tevis. He says Yaakov, I know what's going to happen. You're going to have three hard times in your life. Alai, Ayin, you're going to have troubles with Esav. Esav is going to come with 400 men. Lamed Lavan, Yud Yosef. Says so. One way or the other, you're going to go through this. That's going to be it. Don't worry. Go on with it. So therefore, that's why later on, when Shimon gets taken captive, what does Yaakov respond? He says, "Yosef einenu, v'Shimon einenu, alayhu ayu kolana." He said, "I don't understand. We already went through Yaakov. Now Shim was missing? That's not supposed to happen. I already did Esav. I did Lavan. I did Yosef. Alayhu yukulana. How could Shimon be taken captive?" That's exactly his word. Because he had a guarantee. Alay kalas b'nei. When he asked the Shim, he said, already alayhu yukulana. It's a very sharp word. All right. Everyone should enjoy the day as is traditional.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I was debating.